The spirit of performance defines Acura. And now, it's electric. Introducing the all-electric ZDX, Acura's most powerful SUV yet. While what powers their cars may change, the energy that makes Acura never will. Crafted using the same formula that brought them electrified supercars and multiple IMSA championships, the ZDX has track-tested performance that packs an energy all its own. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system and up to 313-mile range on a single charge, and a Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, the ZDX is everything they said electric could never be. It was built with the driver in mind, just like Acura has been doing since the beginning. We could talk all day, but the only way to experience this electric performance is to drive it yourself. Unlock the energy and order yours at Acura.com.
Fast Money starts right now, live from the Nasdaq market site overlooking New York City's Times Square. I'm Melissa Lear. Traders on the desk are Tim Seymour, Chris Verone, Brian Kelly, and Dan Nathan. Tonight on the show, it is make or break moment for the semi stocks and maybe for the entire market. We'll tell you what Wall Street's waiting for. Plus, Tesla hits the skids, the stock falling again today, now down 15% this year. And one top analyst says it is about to get a lot worse for shareholders. We've got the details. We start off, though, with the big story of the day, the Boeing fallout. The stock down another 5% today after a number of countries and airlines ground one of its models. Let's get to Phil LeBeau in Chicago, who's been following every angle as it's been unfolding. Phil.
Melissa, the numbers are not good. Let's take a look at how many airlines as well as countries or regions have grounded the 737 MAX line of planes from Boeing. Right now, it stands at 36 airlines that have grounded the plane. That amounts to about 64% of the global fleet. And in terms of either countries or regions, we're not going to list them all because it's too long of a list. But you've got the European Union, you've got China, you've got Australia, you've got India. That's just a few of the countries that have said, we don't want this plane flying in our country. So as you take a look at shares of these companies that are out there still flying it, most notably the three U.S. airlines, American, Southwest, and United, we're going to talk about this chart in just a little bit because that's 2013. Let's talk first off, who is flying the MAX? 10 airlines right now still flying it. And most notably, the ones in North America, Southwest, American, United, Air Canada also flying it. Here's the reason why. The FAA calls the plane airworthy. Take a look at Boeing shares, or I should actually tell you how much Boeing shares have dropped since Sunday. 11%. That's when we had the first inclination that we could see some groundings when China said, we don't want the plane flying. And this brings up the question, have we seen this before, Melissa? And yes, we have seen this before. And if you're an investor, you should be encouraged despite what we've seen Boeing shares go through over the last couple of days. Now let me show you the chart showing 2013, January of that year. There are a couple of battery fires for the 787 Dreamliner. There were only about 50 of these flying at the time. And immediately, Japan said, ground it. We don't want it flying. It wasn't long after that that the FAA said, ground it. We need to figure out what's causing these battery fires. It was a huge story. Lasted for 3 months. Eventually, they put the plane back in the air after they figured out exactly what was wrong with the lithium-ion batteries. They had to institute some fixes in the aircraft. They did that. Look what the stock did. Up 81%, 81% in 2013. And it started at the beginning of the year, Melissa, with everyone saying the sky is falling. The Dreamliner is going to be dead in the water. This is a disaster for Boeing shareholders. Look what ultimately happened there. Not saying that's going to happen with the 737 MAX, because this is still unfolding. We don't know where it's going to lead. We don't even know what's coming out of these investigations with Ethiopia and Indonesia. But that is one indication that while it's horrific right now, the shareholders ultimately were rewarded there.
Phil, do you know offhand what the time frame was between the Dreamliner and the first battery explosion, say, till the time that it was actually grounded?
Yeah, it was about 90 days. It was
90 days.
It was January to the end of April. And I remember that, you know, all these reports were coming out. We did a lot of the reports where we said, look, we've learned that they're going to make these changes with the battery in terms of compartmentalizing it within the Dreamliner. And little by little, the stock started recovering. And almost every analyst that I talked to at the time said, I know it looks bad right now, but right. You have to look at the backlog of orders that are here. These customers are not going to run away for good. They will be there.
Sure. Although in that case, we did know exactly what the cause was. It was a battery
and you don't,
fire, and we don't know what it is right here. So
we
that's
don't know what it is here.
Uncertainty.
And by the way, Melissa, we don't know. It could be something related to a part or an engine or some other component in there that Boeing's not responsible for, or it could be pilot error. There's so many possibilities here.
Hey, Phil, so you just mentioned backlog of orders. I look at 2019 estimates are for $110 billion in sales, $124 billion next year. What percentage of that is this plane, the 737 MAX 8?
No, it's a huge percentage. I don't know the exact number, but you're looking at about 5,100 orders. You've got about 7 years worth of orders. The bulk of their orders, where their free cash flow is going to be coming from, it's with the 737 MAX. And that's why they expect to ramp up production from 52 a month, where it is right now, up to 57 by the end of the year. And they're already looking, guys, at the possibility of 62, whether that's in the next year, next couple of years, depending on, you know, if they can get past this and they can obviously move forward and go up to 57 and then look forward from there.
All right. Phil, thank you. Phil LeBeau, very busy at work on Boeing this week. And, of course, Boeing is the worst performer in the Dow for the second straight day, down 11% in these 2 days. How much worse can this get for Boeing? And as a trader, if you love Boeing stock, last Friday, is this your chance, Tim?
Yeah. Well, I might have said even yesterday that, you know, somewhere around this morning's levels, around 365 yesterday morning, so it went down to the same level today. This was down essentially 16% from the highs of 440. This was a gift. That's a gift again today. If day over day you have no other comments from the FAA, but more importantly, Thursday or Friday when we get the results of the black box, none of this diminishes the tragedy at the heart of all this. But as Phil pointed out, there have been times in the history of this company where you've actually had this period where you've had, you know, multiple events over the course of a couple times. Also go back to 1988 when the 737 was essentially just hatched and they had two fatalities within I think about 12 months, and on the second one, the FAA also got involved. When the FAA gives one of these airworthiness directives, it's not necessarily a death knell. And in fact, what we've seen is that often as they work with the company to then come up with solutions, et cetera, that this is actually a chance that the stock begins to rally. So we do not have new information day over day. What we do have is every country in the world effectively, except ours, grounding this airplane. And what does that mean for sentiment? In the short run, the trader in me says, first of all, you break 360, you get out of the way on this stock. But in the short run, until we do and no new information, I wouldn't be selling the shares right now.
Speaking of levels,
Speaking of levels, when you look at charts, the stock has actually done everything you would want it to do given the backdrop. 360 was the big level. It held the 200-day moving average. Mm-hmm. I would also note, it filled a gap from January 30th. There was a big up gap. All you've done here is come down and fill it. The stock is still up 25%. Year to date. So if we forgot about what happened and just said on March 11th, would you accept the stock up 30% year to date? I think a lot of us would say yes. It's back to a good level. I think you'd take a shot on the long side.
That's a very simplistic view of it. With all due respect, that didn't come out in the right way. But I mean, just to say it dropped, and if we didn't know why, would you accept
money. It?
Yes. You have to understand why. And the reason why is not the first plane crash. It is the second plane crash on this airplane model. And while this may sound incendiary or whatever, this is what sentiment is, right?
Sure.
Jumping to the worst case scenario.
I think what's notable, when you look at the two biggest suppliers of Boeing, Hexcel and Spirit Air, both those stocks act really well here. Those have not reflected the same type of pain that we've seen here. Also, Boeing, the last 2 days, they tried to close in on the lows and they couldn't. I like
That's
names
true.
That don't close on the lows.
That's true.
It actually has acted fairly well, technically. I mean, you look at 365, 367, the market's telling you right now that's where you're pricing this risk. We're in this period of pricing out what the risk here. Tons of uncertainty. That being said, I actually think we do have incrementally more information today. We have 64% of the fleet grounded. Probably some other percentage of the fleet that's out there that is still being flown by airlines that haven't grounded it but can't fly into the EU and Singapore and all these things. So a significant portion of the fleet is grounding, takes a significant risk off the table that there's another incident before this gets fixed. And so to me, at 365, 367, you got to be nimble. I think it's worth taking that risk to the point that Phil made, is that At some point, this is a huge part of their revenue stream, 20-30% of their revenues, they got to fix this problem. And so when the problem gets fixed, the stock could recover.
Right. So they don't know what the problem is, and it's going to take a while, like Mel just said, to figure that out. And I think the next kind of shoe to drop is very likely that the FAA is going to actually have to say, we have to ground these planes. And when that happens, this stock is going to be much lower. All those airlines that you said act really well are going to act a lot worse. It's going to be massively disruptive if that happens. Obviously, I have no idea if that happens, but here's a stock that's trading well above a market multiple, expected to grow revenues 10% year over year in 2019, earnings 26%, and it's going to look really expensive if analysts have to start chopping 2019 and 20 earnings because they're just not certain whether they're going to be making those 50.
I'm a buyer on, if the FAA grounds it.
I'm just saying, but like,
absolutely.
You know, we're talking
about,
we
have more information.
A simple level at 362.5. That was the gap level from January earnings. It stopped there almost to a dime yesterday, right? If it goes through there, there's a lot of room below that.
As instructive, and Phil laid out some really important information about the background here. He talked about 2013 lithium battery. I talked about 1988. Boeing had not been on this kind of a heroic run going into those two incidents, which is what Dan's talking about.
Point.
I mean, the reality is sentiment on the stock and right here has been so bullish for a company that's never executed better, that really had left a lot of their dysfunction of the middle part of this decade, frankly, and possibly all of the early, you know, the first decade of this century. Boeing was not a company that necessarily was, you know, bathed in excellence in terms of how they were executing and getting these jets off the assembly line. So are we going to start thinking that way again? This company does not deserve the same premium.
I mean, this is a stock that people just a couple days ago were saying is a non-cyclical cyclical at this point. It's got such a great. Oh, that's where I heard it from that side of the desk.
And I still think it.
The backlog is so long and so smooth.
Well,
that
hold
we
on
can,
a second,
we
though.
Can see, okay.
So non-cyclical cyclical applies to the definition of the business the company's in and the airline industry. Does not take into account when a company has an idiosyncratic disaster,
sure.
Which would be related to quality control, which is core to what these guys do for a living. So I still think it could be that company, especially when it's an effective duopoly globally. Where are you going to go?
Do we think the backlogs are going to be decline because of this? I mean, if they don't fix it, then the company's got a huge problem.
Well, if the
but are the backlogs
grounded,
really going to be down?
If those planes are still grounded by airlines, international airlines, they're not going to actually probably, they're probably going to delay those orders or whatever they, you know, haven't done because they're going to buy three next year. They're going to buy, you know, I mean, that's
depends how long the grounding is, right?
Does that just mean that Airbus is the big winner here? We had 52-week highs on that stock
only
today.
Only if airlines switch. If they actually can switch to the A321 single aisle, then sure, yeah.
Well, if you look at the response of the airlines today, these were bad charts going into this. UAL, basically fresh lows. American, basically fresh lows. Delta's the only one that showed up today in any capacity.
Which has no MAX 8s, by
no
the
MAX
way.
No MAX 8,
in
the
fleet.
Stock outperforms. That's how you play the airline.
You know, I'll throw something else in here. You know, thinking about how dicey these trade talks are, we heard about over the weekend that Beijing is pushing back a little bit. I think this is actually the worst possible news for the U.S. trade delegation here. When you think about it, obviously this is a huge export of the U.S. here. We know that China is trying to develop a very similar plane, a single aisle, you know, competitor to this sort of thing. You know, Airbus is, you know, really focused, obviously, on Boeing throughout Europe here. We have picked trade disputes with our enemies and our allies alike here. So to me, I actually think that this is just bad news for the trade.
Dan, everybody grounded this plane. The Chinese seemed like they were first and it seemed like it was politics, but everybody in the world grounded this plane.
Except us. So as long as we stay out, I'm just telling you, the optics of it are not great. It's not a political statement. It's just, you know,
but I don't think this affects
is.
A trade deal. I mean,
really?
if the question here is Boeing going to be the company that suddenly exerts, you know, or takes any levers the U.S. had of getting a trade settlement, I think that's crazy.
I think, Tim, not only does this not affect a trade deal, this hasn't been a market issue. This has been a Boeing issue. Industrials ex-Boeing have actually acted pretty good the last several days. So there's a message there as well.
All right, coming up, more trouble for Tesla as the company battles the SEC. One top analyst says the stock is about to suffer for a different reason. We've got the details. Plus, semi stocks are soaring this year, but the rally could be about to come to a screeching halt. We will explain. And later, it's a fast money first. Top technician Chris Verone here stepping up to the plate to give us a fast pitch. You will not believe which stock he says is heading higher. We are live from Times Square in New York City. Much more Fast Money coming up next.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. Saving, researching, investing. Now you can take those investments to the next level with Yahoo Finance, our sponsor today. I have an investment account with Schwab and a 401k with Fidelity, and I use Yahoo Finance to consolidate them so it's incredibly easy to manage. They've been helping great investors like you for over 25 years. So whether you're a seasoned investor or just looking to level up, Yahoo Finance can simplify things, putting all your tools and data in one spot. Yahoo Finance takes a 360-degree look at the financial news cycle, from breaking news, original editorial perspectives, analyst ratings, independent research, and customizable charts. They've got you covered. You can see all of your 401k and other investments by securely linking your brokerage accounts. Yahoo Finance gives you insights and helps you see your wealth in its entirety. That big picture perspective helps smart investors become even better. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit the brand behind every great investor. YahooFinance.com, the number one financial destination. YahooFinance.com. That's YahooFinance.com.
Welcome back to Fast Money. Check out shares of Tesla falling today after two analysts cut their price targets on the electric car maker. It is our call of the day. Morgan Stanley's Adam Jonas says Tesla is hitting a demand air pocket earlier than expected. This is CEO Elon Musk is fighting back against the SEC, accusing them of trampling his free speech. The stock is down 15% this year. Is there a clear path ahead? For Tesla. Okay.
Well, there's a clear path ahead, I think, for investors in this. I mean, you just hit mute on all this noise. I mean, for the last three years, we've had unbelievably great news, and then we've had unbelievably horrible news. We've had an SEC investigation. We've had they're not going to raise money. We've had that they're selling more cars than they thought they were going to sell. And the stock just traded between, let's call it 250 and 380 or so. And the 200-day moving average has really kind of served as the base of this channel, if you want to call it that. So I think bouncing off 275, which is the 200-day moving average right now, I think you can take a shot and buy this here. I mean, what's going to happen with Elon Musk? They're going to fine him, maybe. Stock's not going to react to that. If there is a downturn, I don't think the stock reacts to that. I think the holders of the stock are much longer term. They're talking about changing a bunch of things out there, a disruptive type of company with a 5 to 10 year horizon.
What if this gets political in that Elon Musk said on 60 Minutes, I have no respect for the SEC, or I disrespect the SEC.
Short sellers enrichment commission.
Let's say the SEC says, you know what, slap on the wrist, that's not good anymore. We gave you a shot at that. You are no longer going to be CEO. You will be whatever, chief creative officer, whatever the hell you want to call your title.
It's just what Elon Musk wants. Okay, look, this to me, you talk about noise. I think Elon Musk wants the SEC as a scapegoat. I think this is a classic case of let's create a distraction
around. Scapegoat for what? For the stock going down? Does the stock go down if Elon Musk becomes
a
chief?
Scapegoat
whatever?
For the lack of execution. I mean, we led in talking about a major air pocket in demand, but more importantly, I think the issues are around the balance sheet of the company, the ability to generate free cash flow, the inability to get to market. And Brian talked about it's all noise. I mean, is it noise that the company has cut CapEx, cut guidance, cut staff, cut stores, cut prices?
Yeah, but we've heard the story so many times. There's always been these horrible things with Tesla, and they actually end up some way pulling
up. 5 years.
That's my point. You trade it from 275 to 380. If you trade it in that range, if you just hold on to it for 5 years, then who cares? But you can trade this range. It's pretty reliable.
Brian, the problem I have here is the only people who have made money on this stock are those that haven't played. Right.
This or traded the range.
This has been dead money. You look at how it's performed this year. In a risk-on year, you've underperformed meaningfully.
Not dead money, though, Chris. I mean, people have lost money.
Think about the volatility.
Stock has done nothing over 5 years with enormous volatility, where the CEO tells you funding secured, lures people in. The stock, you can't tell me this has been.
And you know who's had it right the whole time are the bondholders. The bonds trade 84 today. The bonds tell you a very different story than what the equity has told
this year. But the bonds have traded down before, and they get their financing. So until this game is over, you can still play it. I mean, this is a trading show. We're not talking about investing.
Why would you?
Because you've got a trading range with massive volatility that I have a very good risk reward. I've got a very low stop out point here at, let's call it 270.
Very
Why wouldn't
low
I?
Risk,
I very low risk reward for a trade right here. If 270 is my stop, I can get in at 283 with a shot to get it back up to 380. I'll take those odds
you're
all day long.
The downside at this point in time
is
small in
right,
your view.
That's
so
what
you
I'm saying.
The range. Range.
Every time.
It's a trading show. That's what I do for a living.
The other problem
I trade.
Right.
So you buy it low and then you sell it higher.
You've gone from 10 days to cover. 10 days to cover to 2.5 days to cover right now. The short interest has come out of the stock. There's risk there. There's not the shorts to come to the rescue here and squeeze this thing higher. I think particularly if you break 260, you're looking at a stock that goes much lower here. You've underperformed the S&P this year. You've underperformed the autos. Why not take a shot on GM? Why not take a shot on BMW?
I'll be nowhere near this stock at 260. I'll be no place in this at all at 260. At 270, BK is gone. He'll go and drive a Volt.
All right. For more on Tesla and why Wall Street thinks there is more pain ahead, head over to CNBC.com. I'm Melissa Lee. You're watching Fast Money on CNBC. First in business worldwide, here's what else is coming up on the show.
There's one fast food stock that's hitting a fresh high today and leaving its biggest rivals in the dust. And this hot stock could be about to heat up. We've got the details. Plus, it's history in the making. Top technician Chris Barone is stepping up to the plate for a fast pitch. He says there's one beaten down stock that's about to break out. He'll tell us the name when we return. There's much more Fast Money after this.
People today can spend half their lives over 50. So it's good to be financially ready for what's important to you as you get older, like a family vacation. Or starting your dream business.
Welcome to Connie's Coffee. How may I help you?
AARP's trusted financial tools can help you plan for whatever your future holds. That's why the younger you are, the more you need AARP. Start planning today at aarp.org/moneytools.
What's on the horizon for financial markets? At PGIM, it's a question that over 1,400 investment professionals relentlessly research in pursuit of your long-term goals. Specialized across asset classes, but united in collaboration, our teams provide global and local expertise. Our investments shape tomorrow, today. Pursue your tomorrow with PGIM, a leading global asset manager.
Welcome back to Fast Money. Semi stocks making a comeback this year, soaring off the December lows, nearly retracing all of its losses from the recent sell-off. Josh Lifton's in San Francisco to break it down for us. Hey, Josh.
Melissa, let's take a look at those semis using the SMH. Since the closing low on December 24th, it's now up nearly 30%. It saw a dip a bit last week, though, still up about 20% year to date. Some of the names making the biggest moves since that low: Xilinx, AMD, Micron, NVIDIA, and Intel. The team at Bank of America Merrill Lynch out with a new research note just today saying that fund managers cut back their allocations to semis, leaving them less exposed than their prior peak, so they're betting managers flock back in. The data supports their buy ratings, they told clients, on Xilinx, Intel, NVIDIA, and AMD. I also checked in with RBC's Mitch Steves. Now, he bets that the semis, excluding analog, do move higher from here. So that's memory, semi-cap equipment makers, as well as NVIDIA and AMD, in part because demand could be stronger than expected in certain key end markets in the back half of the year, like the data center and smartphones, he says. Biggest risk to the group, he argues, is that a trade deal does not get done between the U.S. and China, but Steves bets that it does. Melissa, back to you.
All right, Josh. Thank you. Josh Lifton in San Francisco for us. Let's trade the semis. Dan Nathan, what do you say, especially in the week where we've got a major semiconductor deal in the books?
Well, listen, I think deals are really important when you think about the performance that we had from 2014 all the way up into the early 2017. It powered a lot of the outperformance that we saw in this group. And I think as we think about 2018, and we talked about it a lot, this group was one of the most first cyclical groups to really roll over, and it never made a new high with the broad market. And I think a big part of that had to do with the fact that there was a lot of ordering ahead of expected trade war. So here's the issue. We have inventories that are high. They're going to take a little time to back up. And like Josh just said, you know, the back half of the year could be a lot better. I would look at names like Applied Materials, AMAT, that are really beaten down, sentiment's really poor, expectations are really low. That might be a name into the back half of the year that should see a pickup in orders.
Yeah,
for me, it's a no touch for a while here. I think these are the leading edge of any type of weakness in the market. Now, it doesn't mean they have to go down and retest their lows. But again, I don't think we've priced in enough of the economic weakness. We haven't priced in a hiccup in the trade talks whatsoever. And so up at these levels after this run, it just doesn't make a lot of sense for me to get long semis.
Well, you know, since we've got a technician here on the desk, Chris, why don't you head over to the plaza and break down the semis for us?
We're going to talk about this group a couple ways. And I actually think what's ironic here is as we celebrate the 10th anniversary of the bull market for the broader market, semis had a bear market last year. When you look at what the SOX did from March of 2018, and Dan's right, these things peaked early. They peaked in March of 18. They were down 27% from the highs down to the lows in December. Coming off those lows, up 30. So down 27, up 30. it leaves you right back at the old highs. We've come in about 2% from the high, so it's been a very modest pullback over the last few weeks. And if we look at the longer-term chart here, I think the big question is, we are right back into those resistance levels from March of 2018. But I think the difference this time around is they've reemerged as a leader. So in what has been a sideways or a challenging tape over the last several days, we've actually seen some really good outperformance from this group. Now, this is the SOXX. This is cap-weighted. If we actually look at the equally weighted semiconductor index, this has already taken out those 2018 highs. So in equally weighted terms, semis actually act a lot better here. And I'm going to give you two that we like in particular. The first is the biggest in the group. This is Intel. Broke out of this big base last year. Started to turn back up here over the last several weeks. You think you get this above, you know, 55, 60, you're looking at maybe a $70 or $75 long-term chart. This is a very, very good picture. And then NVIDIA, a name that was certainly beaten down here. They took 60% out of this one over the last number of months. It is now basing. We think it's turning. You start to get this above that 165 level, we think you give a run back to that 200-day moving average. So very tradable NVIDIA. Intel looks good long-term. I think very importantly, equally weighted, semis have already broken out above those 2018 highs.
Why don't you come back over to the desk, Chris? Be weird if we left him over there.
Yeah, it would be a little odd.
Empty chair here.
Yes.
Would you rather?
Yes, okay, here we
Intel
go.
Intel or NVIDIA?
And remember, Chris drawing with his middle finger does not mean he's being impolite.
I think he changed it up today.
Look, it's okay. It's very effective. It gets people's attention. Yeah. So Intel or, sorry.
NVIDIA.
NVIDIA.
Intel. Okay.
And to me, this listening? Is a combination of a couple things. First of all, just I would be leaning more towards the value. I think some of the momentum in NVIDIA is certainly still needs to be proven again. I think the company's come way down in valuation. But I like the opportunities in 5G. I think data center is kind of a safe haven for these guys and a place where they continue to show they can execute and outperform the competition.
Chris, I'm curious because you said equal weight semis look good,
yeah.
Which implies that smaller cap semis have actually done well, but you're recommending larger cap semis. And so is there a thinking that they're going to catch up? But there's,
Actually, when you look at, for example, like the Russell 2000 uh-huh. semi index, it has decisively made new highs. So the real strength here, or the real alpha over the last number of weeks, has come from the smaller ones. We like Intel longer term. I also like the yield on that one as well. I think NVIDIA probably gives you the most bang for your buck in the short term. They wash this thing out down 60%. Skyworks might be one more that's washed out here, starting to turn up.
Okay.
I'm bullishly positioned in Intel for a lot of the reasons that Tim just said, and I thought expectations got pretty low there. I think NVIDIA sets up as a really interesting trade, though, just from a sentiment standpoint. We know how positive it was last year. We know how quickly it turned. I think this base and that gap from January, November, there's a couple of gaps there, fill up to the 200 level on the slightest bit of good news. I mean, it just looks that way, and I'd be very surprised with expectations where they are right now that there is a considerable gap to the downside based
there's
on...
There's no skepticism in your view surrounding the Mellanox deal?
Well, I mean, listen, the street liked it. We're not going to know the synergies. We're not going to know all that stuff for months and months and months. So here's the thing. If this company feels that confident to make that size of a deal, they put up a beat and raise when they report after expectations have come down two quarters in a row. That stock's going to 180, 185, maybe 190.
And I think the big turn here was when Apple came out and warned earlier this year, Apple was telling you what the semis were telling you 12 months prior. Remember, all these stocks peaked in March, April of 2018. A lot of bad news has already been discounted in these. I think NVIDIA, I think Intel, I think Skyworks, they're longs here.
Yeah, look, I think the presumption is that there are few catalysts to get us through this well-documented resistance on semis because of the world we live in and the trade war. But the reality is that I do agree. I think people have zero expectation that semis could pick up the boat. And think about how these companies really are tethered to enterprise spend, et cetera. I think some of that has to pick back up. Companies should have been cautious on that. And I think they could change their tune. Not overnight, but I don't see the upside that capped.
Yeah, for me, NVIDIA's got the best upside here. I mean, Intel, I'm a buyer at $50 or so. See if it comes back just because it's had a bit of a run. But NVIDIA, to me, has the potential for just a bigger pop. To Dan's point, sentiment's terrible on it. It's traded sideways. You could have a big breakout. There's a gap. There's multiple different things that you could look at that would pull in multiple different types of traders. So I'd much rather be in that one.
All right,
that's how we play the game, right? rather. We
yes.
would.
Yes. Oh, thank you for getting back to that.
Following the rules.
Still ahead, Chipotle shares sizzling. That stock hitting a multi-year high today and now up nearly 100% in the last 12 months. The company just did something that could keep the stock on fire. We've got the details. Plus, check out this chart of a key market indicator that could be pointing to a major breakdown for one lagging sector. That's like a riddle what? In a conundrum.
Ooh.
That, yeah.
Surrounded by a mystery.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. And we'll tell you what it is when Fast Money returns.
Yes.
Welcome back to Fast Money. Chipotle rallying and hitting its highest level in more than 3 years today after the fast casual chain launched its own loyalty program. Kate Rogers is back at headquarters with the details. Hey, Kate.
That's right. Chipotle launched its loyalty program nationwide this morning. Users can enroll online or via Chipotle's app. The company is teaming up with Venmo to build buzz during launch week, depositing surprise amounts from $1 to $500 directly into Venmo accounts for those who sign up at ChipotleRewardMe.com. This comes at a time when digital is growing quickly for the brand, up 66% in Q4 and accounting for nearly 13% of sales. CEO Brian Niccol told CNBC exclusively that loyalty will further engage customers with its digital platform.
I think this is going to be a multiplier effect on our digital business. And what we've really seen in the markets is people just get more engaged, more committed in our digital system with the loyalty program.
Under Niccol's leadership, Chipotle has been moving to make the customer interaction more seamless, installing pickup shelves in stores for digital orders and testing out Chipotle lanes or drive-thrus for these digital orders as well. The company also has second make lines in stores for digital to speed up the process.
Chipotle has a significant advantage in that we've built dedicated kitchens to serve digital orders. And we've integrated those kitchens both with our app and with delivery drivers so that the orders come in a way that's seamless. They don't interrupt the flow of the line in the restaurant.
And analysts say that's what Chipotle is really getting right here, creating a digital experience that is seamless from screen to store, with loyalty being the next step in building out that ecosystem. Melissa?
All right. Thank you very much, Kate Rogers. Kate Rogers at headquarters. Chipotle's new loyalty program could let it cement its upper hand against one fast food rival. That would be McDonald's. Well, McDonald's has rallied 15% in the last year. That's nothing compared to Chipotle, which has almost doubled its share price in the same time period. So does this mean that Chipotle has become the new fast food king? Huh. Dan, ooh. I don't know why I went to Dan, but Dan.
I love myself a Chipotle burrito. Here's the thing, carnitas, obviously. I think one of the things that you just said there is really interesting. They're building out separate kitchens, not to avoid the flow of the line in the restaurant. What did we see last year when Starbucks started digital ordering? I mean, there's all these kind of pain points for this stuff. And I think, a steady rollout, the combination with the rewards program and that sort of, it all makes sense to me. This is where it's all going. And then here's the thing. I mean, this is going to be, really nice upside for a company trying to get back to peak earnings, which, we've all been kind of saying that's how you're going to value this thing going forward.
Are we going to look back and at this chart and say this was Domino's, 2014 through 2017? Mm-hmm.
I think so. And what strikes me is people missed this from 200 to 400. They've missed it from 400 to 600. And I think they're going to miss it from 600 to 800. The sentiment on
this. But at what price, Chris? Because I don't mean to interrupt you. I do think that Brian Niccol's done an amazing job here, and I do think, I've been probably not bullish. I haven't been shorting it or negative, but on the stock for $300. So I'm one of those people. But I look at the valuation here, and at some point, look, a digital rollout, that's great on loyalty. And by the way, that was great for McDonald's stock, and it was great for Domino's stock. But at some point, how many bites can we take out of this one? Because we've rallied on a digital rollout for Chipotle, I feel like, for the last 3 months. And I think at some point, at a P.E. of over 60 right now, I have trouble with the stock.
Domino's rallied for 3 years
technology. Their global growth was unbelievable. I mean, do we expect that that's what Chipotle's kind of foundation for?
I don't see why it couldn't. I mean, the momentum's very strong in this. They're firing on all cylinders. To me, I just wouldn't stand in front of this. This has gone from a company that had all kinds of PR problems to now all of a sudden they're firing every cylinder. You go to any Chipotle, they're busy now. But that doesn't mean that McDonald's is going to get hurt by this. If you just look at how McDonald's is traded, it looks to me like this coiled spring. If they can fire on a couple cylinders, and I know they're doing quite well, but if they can fire on a couple cylinders, they too could break out like this. So I think you can stay long Chipotle, maybe take a third off and start buying McDonald's.
I think what's been so unique about this sector is how bifurcated it's been. Chipotle's been good. McDonald's has been decent. Wendy's is rolling over. Domino's is rolling over. I think you can own McDonald's. I think you can own Chipotle. But this is not a group call here. And I wonder if there's a message there about growth or about that space that some of its peers here have actually rolled over
recently.
What
people want to eat or don't want to eat these days.
Well, but again, you could probably still bifurcate McDonald's and Chipotle being in different places on that spectrum. I do think that fast food, fast casual are destroyed by minimum wage. Mm-hmm. Not making a statement on should people earn more. I'm telling you that their labor costs have gone a lot higher. Yeah.
Coming up, check out this chart of one economic indicator on the verge of reaching a key level. We'll tell you what it is and what it could mean for the markets. Plus, Chris here stepping up to the plate, getting ready to pitch one Dow stock trading near its highest level since right after October, the October sell-off. Find out the name and what has him so bullish when fast money returns.
Well, we've got a very strong portfolio, which gives us the ability to have a balanced approach to investment in our business, where we've got growing production, less risk, and disciplined spending, which leaves plenty of free cash for shareholder distributions. And so we're able to balance shareholder distributions with growth in a way that is really underpinned by our very strong and attractive portfolio.
That was Chevron CEO Michael Wirth on Squawk Alley earlier today on boosting the company's CapEx for the year, which could be good news for in-house technician Chris Verone, who, in a Fast Money First, is giving us a very special fast pitch tonight. So, Chris, why don't you take it away?
We're going to make a contrarian call here on energy. The first observation I would just point out, crude is quietly acting really well here. This is Brent up through 65. Despite all the concerns about global growth, oil acts well. These are the energy stocks relative to the S&P. We think they can play some catch up given how well crude here is acting. When you look at the long term on a secular basis, I also think it's worth noting that the energy weight in the S&P is back to its historic 98-99 low, about 5%. So you're at the lowest weighting ever. Crude's acting okay. I think you can buy CVX here. And when you look at the turn here, you've seen some relative improvement. This is a five-month relative high for CVX. You've started to break out of this little base. We think higher, crude better, CVX, one way to play it.
All right. Does anybody have questions for Chris here? Oh, BK.
Yes. In fact, I do. So, Chris, looking at all these, are you looking more for the breakouts in this space or some of the laggards? I mean, Chevron looks to me like it's about kind of the breakout.
Yeah.
But there are a lot of laggards out there. How do you differentiate the two technically?
Yeah, there's plenty of laggards out there. What kind of interests us here, given how bad the sector has been, I think if you're going to look for flows into the group, it's probably going to be the more defensive names, the Chevrons, the Exxons. Conversely, you know, the service names, the E&P names are still quite weak. One thing I would note, you have started to see the pipelines act a little bit better here, the MLPs, Kinder Morgan, Williams. That might be one other way to play it, but this is about starting to dip your toe into what is a very out of consensus call.
Chris, how do you see Chevron trading relative to its peer group? So the other big integrated players, not even so much Exxon, because I think they have issues, but maybe even a Royal Dutch, a BP, your thoughts?
Well, I think what's interesting, when you look at some of the global ones, the Royal Dutches, the BPs, those were actually your leaders last year. I think there's a reversal going on right now. And just given how hard this sector is, we have to own leadership. I think CVX gives you your best chance at finding that here.
All right, time to vote. Are you buying or selling Chris's pitch for CVX? Dan Nathan, why don't you
I'm a seller. I just think that, you know, obviously, despite...
It's his first fast pitch ever.
I'm bearishly positioned. Don't you watch the OA on Friday?
Of course
the XLE.
You do.
I just think the dollar where it is right now, the expectations for global growth reflation anytime soon isn't great. He said it himself. It's a bit contrarian. I'm a seller here. It's come a long ways in a short period of time.
Frank Hill.
You know what? I'm the exact opposite. I'm a contrarian to risk reversal. I'm a buyer for all the reasons he just said. If you look at what oil, it's behaving unbelievably well with a strong dollar, weak global growth. Every time it wants to go down, it pops back up like a cork in the ocean. You buy that one.
Tim.
So look, I TiVo OA religiously.
Oh, now you're backtracking out of a hole.
I am a buyer here of Chris's pitch. Listen to what the CEO talks about.
Scout?
Yeah, well, he looks like one. That's a compliment, by the way. He's probably an Eagle Scout.
Yeah.
But I think the combination of the CEO talked about free cash flow. He talked about discipline in spending. That's why this company stands above their peers in the integrated space.
All right. Well, do you at home think Chris's pitch for Chevron has good energy? Vote in our Twitter poll at CNBC Fast Money. We will reveal the results later in the show. Plus, financials lagging the markets this month, and one trader just made a big bet. One major player in the space could continue to roll over. We will break it down. We're live at the Nasdaq in Times Square. Much more Fast Money still ahead. We've got a market flash on Kraft Heinz, the stock jumping after hours. Let's get to Leslie Picker for all the details. Hey, Leslie.
Hey, Melissa. Kraft Heinz hiring RBC to review options for the company's Breakstone unit. That's according to a story just put out by CNBC.com's Lauren Hirsch, who is citing people familiar with the situation. Breakstone includes dairy brands related to cottage cheese, butter, sour cream, and CNBC is reporting it could fetch about $400 million in a sale. Now, RBC didn't respond to CNBC's request for comment. Kraft Heinz declined to comment. Kraft Heinz has been, of course, slimming its portfolio to help bring down some of that leverage and refocus the company, Melissa.
All right. Thank you very much, Leslie Picker, back at headquarters. So potential sale, $400 million. That seems like a drop in the bucket in terms of the debt
last time
that it
I
has,
checked,
the problems.
Sam Breakstone, not a catalyst for your stock, especially with all the issues here. And even if you didn't have these issues, the reality is the reason why maybe some of this stuff went on, whatever we're going to call this, is because the top line hasn't been growing here for a long time. So, yes, selling off pieces, $400 million doesn't change the calculus.
Yeah, how does the chart look?
Stock's been in a bear market for 2+ years. We looked at it a couple weeks ago, down 40, 50%. Yeah. It takes more than this for us to change our tune.
All right, let's get to our chart of the day now because it's a good one. Check out the 10-year yield nearing a two-month low and coming dangerously close to closing below the 260 level for the first time since January 3rd. Just how low can it go? What could this mean for the markets? And, of course, the first thing you think about, Dan, the financials, obviously.
Yeah, I mean, listen, we spend a lot of time talking about net interest margins for these big money center banks. And, you know, they've really underperformed over the last year and a half, much like we've talked about groups like the semis here. And a lot of that has to do with the fact that we've seen this 2-10-year spread just kind of grinding down to levels close to inversion. We know what happens when that inverts. Within 12 to 18 months, almost every economist or strategist we have on here says we have a recession. What are the most economically sensitive groups of stocks here? Banks, and they're likely to kind of feel it, you know, first. It's one of the reasons why we've had this underperformance. So to me, you know, it all makes sense to me.
There's going to be a time in the next 60 to 90 days that you're going to be able to buy the banks. They have to reprice in this flat yield curve, but there is no way the Fed is going to let the yield curve go negative just by their actions. So they have a lot of levers that they can pull. If you want to play this, you can buy 2 years and then wait for the banks to come
on. Okay, last year, I mean, they were doing a lot of things that were inadvertently making it kind of get flatter, and then this year they were kind of thinking about different ways to kind of make it get steeper,
but it
just goes lower. I mean,
Europe's Europe's not helping. So, and I do think that that's a weight down on U.S. yields, and the differentials are getting to extremes to where we've seen them. Here's the other side of this, though. I think people underestimate the amount of supply that's coming in the U.S. in the Treasury market, and that's going to put upward pressure. And think about a trade deficit that we just got last month. Think about the fact that matters if this economy is slowing. And Dan, I'm surprised you're not on this. I mean, the lack of support for this administration, to the extent that we've seen central banks diversifying out of treasuries. But more importantly, treasury supply is an issue for yields. It is.
And Tim, I might add to that. When you look at the way Bank of America has actually acted the last couple of days, it held 28. That was a big level reversed right off it back to 29. You've actually seen copper act really well here, too. Copper can be a little bit of a leading indicator for rates. I think the lower rate story is well known. And maybe the question is, Dan, is the market up because rates are down? Or are rates down, and therefore that's a risk to the market? I think that's the big question going forward. I might take the former. I think the market is up because rates are down.
Yeah, and you take the latter.
I take the latter because I think at this stage of this recovery, I think the reasons why rates are down is just not a good setup here after, you know, just this, after the extraordinary measures the world central banks have gone just to get us right here.
Well, Chris had mentioned Bank of America. It is one top performer in the sector this year. But one trader thinks the rally is about to end when the company reports earnings next month. Dan, why don't you break down the action?
Yeah, I think it's really important. Chris just said it. I mean, this is a very constructive-looking stock. It's bounced off of 28 a couple times. There was one trade that kind of caught my eye in Bank of America. It was in the April 26 weekly 28 strike puts. There was a buyer opening 15,000 of the 28 puts, paying 47 cents. Those break even at 27.53 on April 26. 26. Obviously, it's going to catch not only Bank America's earnings, but all the U.S. money center banks will have reported by April 26. So to me, you know, I think it's really interesting. We have a one-year chart right here of Bank America. Like Chris just said, it bounced off of 28 a couple times this year. But you do see that gap, and that was from their Q4 earnings. It's at from 26 to 28. And when I see a trade like this, I kind of think protection for a long holder looking to kind of just have some room to the downside in case it goes back to fill that gap on a miss. And then just real quickly, we were talking about that 210 spread. Yeah. We have a chart right here over the last few years. I mean, I'm hard-pressed to think that doesn't invert. And I understand the fact that when it inverts, it doesn't exactly mean that we're going to have a recession and everything goes to hell in a handbasket. But it's important to keep an eye on.
Yeah. Tim, you're in Citi at this point?
I'm in Citi. I'm in Bank of America.
Okay.
And I just think that the valuations in these banks reflect more recessionary conditions. I can't argue that banks have traded well. I can't argue that the net interest margin dynamic is something. But if the U.S. economy and the lending environment continues to be sideways, these banks are too cheap for me.
You know, going back to the chart of the 10-year yield, Chris,
yep.
Santelli all day today was talking about 255 as being a very key level. And if it breaks 255, that's, you know, disaster. Mm-hmm. But if it stays above, then that paves the way for higher rates at this point.
I think what's interesting is right now when you look at flows into the TLT, which is the long bond ETF, they're in the 95th percentile of every observation going back the last 10 years. So there's a lot of money betting lower yields here. I might be careful pressing that bet right now, particularly with copper up, banks may be acting a little bit better. Even some of the European banks have not taken this last leg lower with German yields.
Yeah.
Just something to watch.
All right. For more options action, check out the full show Friday, 5:30 p.m. Eastern time. Coming up next, the results from a poll on Chris's first fast pitch ever and final
Exciting.
Trades.
Wow.
Here's a question. Do you know what Chris Verone loves to listen to when he's practicing his walk over to the plasma and drawing on his chart with his middle finger to get ready for fast money? It is Tony Braxton, of course. Sorry, Chris, on your very first fast pitch, it is
crushing.
A loss.
Crushing.
Our Twitter fans aren't buying. Well, that's because the margin of loss is so small. It's the narrowest it's been in a long time.
Really?
41% said yes, 59% said no, which is way better than what
it's
you guys have pulled recently.
I thought that
exactly.
The dance version of Unbreak My Heart
is worse.
You really were awful.
Celine Dion is that league. Yeah. Anyway, final trade time, Tim.
Okay, so McDonald's I don't think is awful either. In fact, U.S. comps growing 2.5% is good enough for me right now.
McDonald's. Chris.
CVX, we think it's getting better. Play the bouncing crude. That's how you do it.
Brian Kelly.
You know, another way to play the bouncing crude is to go to those services. Look at Schlumberger, SLB. That's the one you buy.
I'm looking at Schlumberger and Chevron making up 20% of the XLE, and I'm a seller of that one.
Attaboy.
Nice to be against everybody, Dan. That does it for us here on Fast. See you back here tomorrow at 5 for more Fast Money. Meantime, don't go anywhere. Mad Money with Jim Cramer starts right now.
At Capella University, you'll get support from people who care about your success. From before you enroll to after you graduate. Pursue your goals knowing help is available when you need it. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu.